Do you like what you're hearing? Did you know Infinity Break has a Patreon? You can support this show and all IB projects by going to patreon.com/infinitybreak and starting a recurring donation at as little as $1 a month. Your contribution helps us improve the quality of this show and create more shows like it for your listening pleasure. What do you get? Aside from a sense of pride in our work, you get access to bonus audio from our podcast, pre-release sketches from Nesta Paragon and Arcane, and access to other behind-the-scenes nonsense and news. You help just by listening, but I hope you'll consider supporting us through Patreon as well. Once again, that's patreon.com/infinitybreak. And now, back to the show. It's Nixon's illegitimate son and Susicle on this week of Horses and Men with Leslie and Ben. I am the Ben of that.
And I'm the Leslie. This is a weekly podcast about Netflix original comedy series BoJack Horseman.
And Leslie, my pal, what episode are we talking about today?
We're talking about Season 2, Episode 9, The Shot.
Our story begins in the 1970s with a young BoJack Horseman watching his hero, Secretariat. The racehorse champion is giving an interview about our boys out in Vietnam fighting the good fight against the communists. Secretariat's patriotic performance seems less than convincing, but it leaves an impression on young BoJack, who, upon seeing his hero smoke, tries a cigarette from his mother's purse. That does not end well if you know anything about Beatrice Horseman. Now in the present, something's missing from BoJack's Secretariat movie. Turtletop has cut out some critical scenes, and BoJack feels it's messing with the story's intended message. Defensive about his hero's legacy, BoJack recruits Mr. Peanut Butter, Princess Carolyn, Kelsey Jennings, and character actress Margot Martindale to stage a heist of the Nixon Library and get the most poignant shot of the film.
Right.
Hey, Leslie.
Hey, Ben.
Intellectually, I think this episode's kind of light.
Yeah, I agree. I agree that it's a little bit of a light one. A few things that I will note is that this is kind of one of those episodes that, even though we're deep in season two now, still manages to drop off some things like season one did, in that it seemed light at the time, but turned out to be kind of a foundation for deeper storylines. Particularly what I'm thinking of is the very beginning with Beatrice talking to BoJack, making him smoke the cigarette and then saying, you know, that she's punishing him for being born. This is one of those instances where we have not gotten an awful lot of that interaction yet. Mostly it's just been kind of seemingly played for laughs. But as we know, there's a lot of deep stuff going on there. I think that's one of those deceptively deep moments. But aside from that, and there's the monkey running up the hill at the beginning, you know, the running gag of that, which will, of course, come back.
Well, also, touching on his mom real quick, certainly that will be developed later on in later seasons, particularly season four.
Yes, that's,
but, you know, that opening line, I don't know if we're going through this beat by beat yet, but her opening kind of bit of, don't you dare cry, and whatever, and then his later admission that he doesn't know how to cry in front of people, certainly contributes to this character's inability to ask for help or show weakness.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, that certainly was why that was placed there. For the audience to see, you know, now we know why BoJack doesn't cry in front of people, because of his abusive mother. However, one thing I will say, even though it's a kind of an intellectually light episode, which means this might be a bit of a short one as well.
Yeah, I have notes. They're just, nothing's deep. There's no philosophical stuff I've written down.
I just love a good heist story. Always have. Watching them go through all of the stuff that they went through in order to make it to the Nixon Library in order to film their shot, which ends up propelling the story forward a bit, as this is the reason why, of course, we say goodbye to Kelsey in this episode as a result of that.
Which is going to cause and effect lead into one of my favorite episodes. Everyone's favorite episode, the silent one.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wouldn't say that's my favorite, but it's up there.
No, I didn't mean everyone like you and me. I mean, like, it's critically acclaimed.
It should be. But yeah, do we see her again before Fish Out of Water? I don't know.
I couldn't tell you.
I don't know for sure. Well, we'll find out together. folks. I don't think that we do, though. Maybe once. I'm not sure. We'll find out. But yeah, so that happens. Meanwhile,
it would certainly make sense, by the way, if that was the case.
Yeah.
Because such an abrupt no closure.
Oh, well, we fired her. Bye. Yeah. Oh, well, she's fired.
Yeah, well, silly me, I fired her.
Oof. Yeah. So let's see what else happens beyond that, beyond the heist. Well, obviously, you know, part of the heist was the distraction at the art gallery, which had some fantastic moments in it as well.
Are we talking about my favorite character, Princess Carolyn?
Yes. Yes. We are talking about your favorite character, Princess Carolyn, and her fantasy inside of Glowing Fuzzy Nonsense, which was the name of the Thomas Kincaid painting that she finds herself peacefully transfixed into while there is a gunfight going on behind her, directly behind her. Such a great moment. And also really great.
Yeah, I think that has a lot about Princess Carolyn, but we'll get to that when we get into the beat-by-beat stuff.
Yeah, we'll get into that. I'm just kind of talking off the cuff here about, it's a lighter episode, but it's still got some really good moments. So your notes sound like they are chronologically sound and probably better than mine. So why don't we hop into it?
Okay, so I'm just looking at my notes for the first time in a while. First thing right off the bat, the lesson of the day is don't manipulate people.
All right,
which also
fair.
Might be one of the underpinnings of the show.
Sure.
Sure. I guess we already talked about the don't you ever cry part.
Yes.
But, you know, that is before any rises to fame or betrayals with Herb or any of his kind of post-crash stuff or things that will happen later this season that are momentous incidents in BoJack's life. I'm referring to New Mexico. Before any of that stuff happens, rewinding all the way back, don't you ever cry is probably the opening thing that fucked him up.
Oh, sure.
And that plus I'm punishing you for being alive plus fighting family. That little trifecta cocktail of shittiness.
Yeah.
You can draw the straight line. I mean, that's some light analysis. The bad things in his childhood remain bad in his psyche today, but like...
Yeah, but this is the first time that we're starting to get our hints in the season of what makes him tick and how long he's been this way. You know, because especially in season one, we kind of got the impression that he was just sort of this happy-go-lucky guy and he just wanted to be in comedy, and then he fell into this sitcom and became wildly famous and maybe that's what did it. But now we're finding out that he was already pretty screwed up to begin with.
Yeah. And I want to give this show credit for, there's a number of ways you could have done this, and I feel a show focused more on telling would have had him like sit down perhaps during one of the Diane biography scenes in the previous season and been like, oh, my mother always yelled, you know, yada. And he would have explained this whole thing. But I do like how they show these little vignettes over the course of parts of season one, season two, very prominently. It's going to be coming back a lot in season four. They've kind of seeded them as these little vignettes that appear, you know, bits and pieces in season one, season two, and very prominently they'll appear in season four that allow us to just kind of piece together new information about his relationship with his dad and his relationship with his mom. That nothing's ever sat down and spoken to us as exposition that we are allowed to kind of form our own connections and our own impressions of who these people were.
Yeah.
Because we get fractions of the amount of screen time with his mom than we do any of the other main characters.
True. Well, for now,
For now, until she becomes a bit of a regular in season four. But even so, like we only experience her through these tiny little windows, and all the windows are dirty and bad.
Yeah, that's very true. So that was the beginning.
That was the beginning. Do we want to talk about BoJack's hero worship?
I feel like we've talked about it already quite a lot. It's already very obvious that this is his dream because of how much he idolized Secretariat, and I think that, continuing on that theme, of course, in the opening bit when we see him as a child, just like nodding happily and holding his little Secretariat flag and listening to everything that Secretariat says. And then he sees him, you know, of course, take a drag of a cigarette. He's like, oh, groovy. Like, it's very obvious, you know, we already know what a huge fanboy of Secretariat BoJack is. But this, that was just a nice little, I guess, not only a nod to it, but also tying into and sort of creating a juxtaposition between how wholesome he saw his idol to be and how crappy his home life was with his mother when she caught him immediately afterward with the cigarette, of course.
I certainly doubt that that's the start of BoJack's long, long history of substance abuse. I doubt that single cigarette is what did it.
Well, no, no one single thing is going to do it. I'm just saying that it's an interesting snapshot into kind of how we are.
I'm not even refuting you. Like, I am saying incidentally.
Sure.
I mean, I can't imagine that's the origin of that, because one cigarette isn't going to do that, because where's he going to get the second one?
Sure.
There has to be a trend. But, like, it certainly... Yeah, I mean, that's... There's a reason they started banning, like, you know, smoking from, like, television shows once time ticked forward a bit.
Yeah.
And because it if it's in your head as a impressionable cool thing very early on when, I don't know, you're a six-year-old horse.
Uh-huh.
Or person, I guess.
Yeah, sure. Anybody, really. It's not being impressionable, not just for horses anymore. It's for humans also.
This is not a horse only thing.
No.
I mean, we talked about his hero worship, obviously, in the season one finale, which for the listener is the one that opens with the letter.
Yes.
The "I am a horse just like you" thing that's written on the that's read on the Dick Cavett show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we have talked about that at length.
Yeah, we have.
But yeah, BoJack absorbs both smoking equals cool and the Vietnam War is good.
Yeah, yeah. Oof.
One's probably worse for you than the other.
Jeez. I mean, I would...
I do mean the propaganda.
I think it depends. It depends in a lot of ways. One kills you certainly a lot more slowly than the other. I'll say that.
I think "Don't Question Your Government's" a real bad one, though.
Well, that's very true. That's a very good point, Ben. See? This is a light episode.
Is this the first time that Rabinowitz and Princess Carolyn kiss?
Yes, it is.
It is. Okay, so this is the start of the affair.
At first, at the beginning of the episode, when he gets really close to her, and we all think, oh, God, this is about to happen, but he says, "I want to get out of here." And we're like, she is all of us when she's like, what? Because we thought something romantic was about to happen. I assume she probably did, too. But instead, he propositions her to go away with him to a new agency.
To start a business together.
Yeah. But then at the end, when she's like, "I'm all in," and she kisses him, yeah, that's definitely quite a lot of... That's the first time. That was the beginning of that, for sure.
Yeah, my brain's a little fuzzy because we've stretched the production of season two over a couple months because of conflicting schedules or whatever. If I'm remembering correctly, the previous time that we saw Rabinowitz was just when he said, "I think Katie and I are getting divorced."
Yeah, that was the last time we saw him.
Yeah, okay, so this is a... All right, well, anyway, I'm sure people can infer what I'm getting at is this, that, like, right after he says, "Yeah, I think I'm getting divorced," and then the next time we see him, like, "Quick, Princess Carolyn, get in this closet with me," and then he gets, like, real close to her.
And he also mentions,
that is a,
you know...
logical assumption.
Of course, and he also does mention, you know, as a man going through a divorce, you know, there was a lot of red herring stuff going on there.
Yeah, my man's having his midlife crisis at, like, 38
sure,
or whatever.
Sure.
So, which is longer than most rabbits live anyway, so.
Well, that's true.
Aww. We'll talk about this part later. We can maybe talk about it now. That panda says he's endangered.
He does.
I was just joking about animal lifespans, but that line actually made me a tiny bit uncomfy.
Can we also discuss the fact that his shirt is red?
I have that written down right here.
Do you?
Yes.
Because I do too. I was like, he's a red shirt. Oh my God.
Yep. He's wearing a red shirt and they declare that he is most likely to die.
Yep.
Loved it.
Poor Alan. But he made it. He made it through. He and his cell phone. And he's a dad now, which means they're slightly less endangered than they were when the episode started. So.
Yeah.
That's heartwarming.
That's just similar to how we kind of didn't want to think about what animals eat in this world.
Sure.
And it turns out it's other animals.
Yes.
We have also just kind of glazed past population control.
Yeah.
And specifically, pandas endangered?
I can't die. I'm endangered. Oh.
That is a fun little... Again, we always get hung up on those little details, but, like, they're important to me.
Yeah.
This is as jarring as seeing BoJack's feet. And seeing that they're not hooves.
You had to make me think about his feet, didn't you?
Yeah.
It's great. Thanks. Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, I don't really have an awful lot of notes on this one. The only other points that I really, really wanted to make... First of all, we see the monkey running up the hill again, who, of course, later will give some of the best advice on the show, some of the most oft-quoted advice on the show that we will get to. That and we gotta discuss Diane because Diane's back, and hey, she showed up on BoJack's horse step. Anyway,
do you want to try that again, knowing full well I'm not gonna cut out take one?
God damn it, BoJack's doorstep. She shows up on BoJack's doorstep, and
yeah,
now she's back from Cordovia. After realizing that everything that she was doing didn't make a difference at all, she, of course, had her 28th existential crisis of the series. And now she, we don't know yet what she's going to do. I mean, we know what she's going to do. And it's going to be shitty to Mr. Peanut Butter. But as of the end of this episode, we're just left with, well, Diane is now over at BoJack's. And Mr. Peanut Butter doesn't know it. And he thinks that she's writing like the great Cordovian novel about Sebastian St. Clair. So there you have it.
Which they showcase in a great way, where during that phone call,
yes,
you can see a background behind her that looks to be like she is in a foreign location. And then it pulls back to show the audience that she is just, in fact, at LAX.
Yep, she's at LAX and she's behind a backdrop. Just a fantastic reveal. That was a good reveal. I liked that a lot.
Yeah, so let's talk about Sebastian St. Clair.
Yeah, let's do it.
Noted piece of shit.
Yeah, yeah.
There are so many times in this show, and this is the case with a lot of animated media with me, where I do not pick up on who's playing someone.
Ah.
And in fact, when you told me for the first time a number of episodes ago,
uh-huh,
that was Keegan-Michael Key,
sure is.
I did not believe you.
You didn't?
No, I mean, I did, but I was like, but there was a, but wait, no,
yes,
that can't be right.
Oh, but
Keegan-Michael
yes.
Key isn't a puma.
but he is a distinguished and shitty and selfish and terrible puma.
But more importantly, boy, I really did hear him this time.
Did you?
Well, I mean, it's the same deal. Like, I mean, what was I just saying?
Once you know, it's a lot easier to clock.
What was I like just saying that like a couple episodes ago? That, like, even though I've seen Arrested Development forwards and backwards, like, three times, I can't picture Will Arnett at all when I hear BoJack talk.
Right. Yeah, that's right, because I mentioned the same about Aaron Paul.
Meanwhile, I can only picture Paul F. Tompkins every day and every night. but whenever Mr. Peanut Butter speaks as well.
Right.
It's just weird. It's weird. I don't know how my brain categorizes that or processes that, but sometimes I just... Anyway. I wonder if it's because I hear Paul F. Tompkins' voice through a lot of audio media because I listen to his podcast.
Yeah, it's entirely possible.
Whereas I am used to seeing Will Arnett in live-action comedy.
Right.
That's probably it.
That's probably it.
You know what? Hey, I just solved my own brain puzzle.
I'm proud of you.
Let's talk about Sebastian St. Clair and rich millionaires going into foreign countries and fucking up their entire system.
Yeah, for the sake of seeming altruistic. Oh, we've discussed this before, and you actually introduced me to the term
voluntourism.
Voluntourism, that's what it is. Yep. I was just going to say, it seems like we have now gone past, all the way past voluntourism and into just complete self-congratulation when it comes to being someone who quote-unquote helps other people, when clearly he isn't really doing an awful, like he's doing things that would seem altruistic to some layman, I guess, but clearly is self-motivated and selfishly motivated.
Yeah. An uncomfortable topic that I don't know if we are equipped to deal with is I don't know what technically differentiates what he's doing between Bill and Melinda Gates and Oprah.
Oh, well, I don't really know enough about what Bill and Melinda Gates or Oprah does in terms of disadvantaged people.
The Gates are famous for malaria vaccines, and Oprah, it was like a whole season of the Oprah show, built like a giant school for women in somewhere in Africa.
Interesting.
I genuinely do not recall.
I can only imagine that this is definitely some sort of, I mean, obviously send up of that kind of behavior.
Yeah, but there's clearly a way he's doing it that's different from the way they've done it.
I think that a lot of it has to do with the seeking of recognition for it.
Oprah Winfrey's Leadership Academy for Girls.
Oh.
Which is built in... Oh, it's South Africa. Okay.
There you go.
It appears to have recently been celebrating its 10th year anniversary. Established January 1st, 2007.
Oh, well, congrats to you. It's been 11 years going strong.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the thing is, like, yeah, there's like a weird self-gratification angle for Keegan-Michael... I'm sorry, Sebastian Sinclair?
Sure.
No, Keegan-Michael Key's fine. He's very funny and probably not a bad dude.
Probably not.
Yeah, there's a certain self-gratification level for him. And like, he's making it all about himself. There's a, you know, here's the statue of me building the hospital. And here's a painting of me posing for the statue of the, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. I'm not saying Oprah's bad. But also,
you better not.
Like, her name's like right on the front door She's of that listening. School. Like what's, huh?
She's listening.
I'm sure she is. Good. Maybe we'll get a fucking promo. Maybe we'll get included in the book club. We'll get a promo.
Yeah, I'm sure we would after speaking. Whatever.
No, but I mean, I don't know. She's not a bad person, mark. But like, what's the difference? Her name's like right on the front door and all that.
I think that the difference is probably, in the parody of it, you know, a lot of the times this show hits very, very close to specific people, events, phenomena, such as Hank After Dark, for example. Sometimes it sends up more of a concept, much like the entire filming of Secretariat, you know, where it's not one particular thing or event that you can pinpoint. Well, or even, you know, even the film that BoJack was doing before about the stolen Hollywood D, like, you know, that turned into a snack box. Like, it's not, I think that this is sort of more in line with that type of parody where it's not necessarily pointing a finger at, poking fun at, or accusing any one individual or specific individuals of doing this. I think that it's just sort of a, it's kind of accepted that this happens with very rich people sometimes.
Yeah. It's probably, now that I think about it, it's probably more akin to the much more recent example of Elon Musk barging his way into Thailand with his little metal submarine rocket that he built.
Did he do that?
Oh my fuck! Okay.
I hate Elon Musk. Oh my god.
We are all hate Elon Musk, don't worry. Look, to say he tweeted something stupid yesterday is a timeless sentence, but like, boy, he tweeted something stupid yesterday.
What did he say yesterday? See, this is why I gotta get my ass back on Twitter. My hiatus was fun, but I have no idea what's going on anymore. So it's time. What did he say?
God, what did he say? Like, Twitter is the Dark Souls of social media.
What?
Quote unquote.
Elon, honey baby. Honey,
there's
honey.
There's more and it's worse than that.
No. No, honey.
God, don't make me go on Elon Musk's Twitter.
I won't. I'll go look at it later. Besides, we're getting off track here.
Yeah. What Elon Musk did, like, a couple months ago is, do you remember, I assume you heard about the crisis where all those, I think they were soccer players, all those Thai kids got stuck in that cave.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a weirdly background catastrophic news story in our world full of catastrophic news stories.
True that.
But there were a number of engineers and like cave divers down there on the scene who were trying to pull those kids out because there was like a weird, you know, if you're picturing like a the pipes under your sink, weird kind of like sharp bend that they couldn't get people through as easily. So there are a number of like engineers and divers on the scene, and Elon Musk is just like, I'll help.
Oh God.
And shows up And he's like, look, I built you a submarine. And people were like, and the people on the scene were like, Elon, you fucking moron. The submarine's not going to fit. Also, we didn't ask you to come here. Also, please go away.
Oh, my God. Because
you're bringing all this press and cameras, and we're like trying to do this delicate rescue operation. Could you just fuck off?
Oh, my God.
And he's like, no, I'm a billionaire, so I know what's best. So Elon Musk shows up, and he has this fucking submarine. But like the dudes on the scene are just like, okay, we didn't ask for your help and we don't want you here. Please go away. We have this under control. And sure. Like 3 days later, they got the kids out.
Well, there you go. Well, yeah, Elon Musk sucks. He sucks.
So then Elon Musk goes on Twitter and he like publicly declares, and this is where the defamation lawsuit is happening. Cause he was like, yeah, that fucking pedophile cave diver guy.
Is that why he said that? Not-
yeah.
Oh, Elon. Oh, honey.
He said that more or less because that dude asked him to fuck off. But I mean, I'm sure he was more polite about that. But
Oh, Elon.
Yeah. Yeah. He's dumb as dicks.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So, yeah. As you can see, this could apply. Sebastian St. Clair's situation could apply to a lot of self-indulgent celebrities who have a lot of money, who want to look as though they're doing important things for the world when, in fact, they are not.
Yes. So I had to give you a quick summary to catch you up and tell you why that was perhaps similar.
Sure.
But I think maybe boiling down to it, the big difference is probably listens to the people they're helping.
Yeah.
Between, and that's probably the dividing line between the Elon Musks of the world and the Oprah Winfreys of the world, is that Oprah Winfrey addressed a need in that community and Elon Musk wanted to show off his cool submarine.
Yeah. Exactly.
And the Gates, you know, vaccinated all of West Africa, and Sebastian St. Clair posed for not only a statue, but also a painting of him posing for the statue.
Right.
And that's probably the difference.
Yeah. Oh,
it's just not listening or addressing a direct need. Yeah. Because also, what is the need in Cordovia? I would think it's just to get people out of there, considering the whole country's on fire.
Yeah. War tour in Cordovia. We don't know. They don't ever, that's why I'm saying that it's less of a specific, kind of send up, is because they don't really go into exactly what's going on in Cordovia, much in the same way that, well, much in the same way that I guess they didn't go into specifically what Hank did and Hank after. Like, you don't have to. You know, it's a fucked up situation over there.
Yeah, we don't need to cover the war crimes.
Yeah, we don't really need to. We don't really need to know that. Let's
but
see.
But building a hospital in the middle of a flaming field is probably not what that country needs.
Right.
What it probably needs is just a bunch of trucks to take them to the next country.
I'm no military expert. But neither is Sebastian St. Clair. So,
So it's not about addressing their needs. It's about just building buildings with his face on them.
Exactly.
Anywho. So, can we talk about Diane now?
Yes. So, now she's back.
I literally think one of the absolute best parts of this entire season, maybe even the entire show, is during Diane's monologue and how it ends.
Okay.
Diane's monologue where she is talking about the book that she could have written.
Mm-hmm.
It's when that tent catches on fire and she actually goes back to LA.
Yes.
And it's just as she's looking down at the baggage claim. She's like, then you realize the book in your head wasn't a book at all. Or maybe it wasn't even a story. So you just stop.
Yeah.
And it just cuts off literally at stop.
Yeah. Yeah. She
does. And Alison Brie does some sort of annotation in such a way that it super sounds like there is going to be more to that sentence.
I agree, yeah.
But then it just hangs on for like 5 seconds and cuts away to another scene.
Yep. You just stop.
That is fucking brilliant.
It really, really is.
And that couldn't be done in like a novel.
No.
Because it has to be done with that exact vocal intonation.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I like, is like jokes or story elements that can only be communicated in the medium they are being communicated in.
I agree.
Which is a reason I like comics a lot. But like that.
That was a good one. That was a good utilization of, you know, audiovisual media there. I really liked that a lot.
Yeah, because your brain gets a bit of a hang up. Because your brain is kind of, this isn't quite how it works, obviously, but your brain is kind of moving forward with the scene. And then there's a moment, like, it's almost like a record skip. You kind of go, oh, that stopped. That sentence is over.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a record skip.
And then, of course, when she shows up on his porch and he says, you know, what are you doing here? We get yet another, what are you doing here? So.
What are you doing here?
Doesn't say it quite like that, but I caught it nonetheless. And it sucks now, kind of, because now when I catch it, like, at first I'm like, oh, that's clever, they put it in again. But of course, I immediately gravitate toward imagining it in the, what are you doing here? And so it's sort of like, you know, takes me out a little bit. But it's not, that's not their fault. That's my fault for watching this show 58 bazillion times.
It's kind of our fault for doing an academic study of this show.
I mean, yeah. I guess it is kind of on us. That's our bad. That's our bad.
Yeah, academic, even though we have no sources. And have not cited anything.
Don't worry about it.
So, oh, well.
Oh, well.
Let's see. Oh, I want to call bullshit on the idea that Mr. Peanut Butter would not go into a park because the sprinklers are on.
Oh.
Because every golden retriever I've ever met, that is not an issue for them.
Sure. Well, you know, he has a suit on, though.
That's true.
That changes things.
I do super, super, super love the... Oh, that's right. I'm supposed to be hosting a game show right
oh,
now.
Oh, shit. I forgot. I'm totally supposed to be hosting a game show right now.
Cuts back to Ethan Hawke waiting for him.
Yes. And, of course, naturally, as if there was ever any question, he is, in fact, a hawk.
Yeah, you gotta.
You gotta. You gotta.
Oh, I really appreciated the moment between Kelsey and BoJack when he says the, bet you didn't think I had it in me.
And she's, no, I knew. All right, yeah, I loved that. Yeah, and I also love that that's, like, the last thing that she says to him as well.
Oh, oh, shit, you're right, it is.
Yeah, that's the last thing she says to him. And then he goes into work the next morning, and she's been fired, and then they don't talk again until after Fish Out of Water.
Hey, that sucks.
Yeah, you're welcome for that, by the way. But no, I really, also, really like that as well.
Also, jog my memory, they don't talk in Fish Out of Water, do they?
No.
He sees her frequently.
Yes, he sees her a couple of times. Three times, maybe, I think four. And he has written her this note... Well, we'll get to it. Doesn't matter now.
Yeah, we'll get to it.
But yeah, but no, they do not speak to each other. No.
Incidentally, this is also the introduction of one of my favorite characters, whose full voice I will not do because it will sound gross on a microphone. But no, I mean, we're literally not making Citizen Kane.
Yep, yep. He, of course, is just he's just standing there. But there,
yeah, not voiced yet.
Not voiced yet, but just you wait.
Yeah.
The new director...
That catfish.
That catfish, whose name escapes me right now.
Yeah, same here. Let's see. Oh, I'm sorry. I just realized in my notes I had already written down my opener.
Huh. Well.
I wrote down, it's impressionist escapism and The Good Wife.
I don't know.
Oh, well.
Well, you can always...
On that note, let's talk about the impressionist escapism.
Sure.
Princess Carolyn wants out.
Yep.
I think that's very obvious from this episode. And obviously that is a theme that continues later on to season 5,
yep,
which we have just finished watching, is that Princess Carolyn does not actually really like doing what she's doing, or at least wants to retire and leave.
Yeah. I think she's spent so much time trying to be the best at what she's doing that she's only just now starting to realize that maybe it's not what she likes.
Yeah. One thing that I noted, I may have noted this in a previous sequential episode, or it might have been in the episode or season 5 recap. But Princess Carolyn's been a Hollywood agent for like 20 years.
Yeah.
She's probably got a couple million packed away.
Hollywood. Although for the
Thank
first,
you, Leslie.
Although for the first like 19 years of it, it was Hollywood. So
I was about to say that, but I didn't want to appear confrontational.
You can be as pedantic as you like. It's fine.
Thank you.
No, but yeah, you're right. She's probably a little, she's probably stacked. She's loaded.
Yeah. She's probably got a couple million packed away. She's been a Hollywood agent for 20 years.
Yeah.
She could literally just fuck off to Nebraska and retire.
Yeah.
Just somewhere where there's not a ton of rent, get a house for like $100,000, and she could just be at peace.
That's true. She could.
But she's still here, because she hasn't realized that's an option for her yet. I don't know why I said Nebraska. I guess I have some friends in Nebraska. But, like...
Nebraska's a fun place to fuck off to.
The point is, yeah, she sees this painting during the heist... in which there is a sub heist at the Los Angeles strip mall art gallery or whatever.
It's a distraction so that the police cars will leave the Nixon library so they can sneak in and shoot.
Exactly. Princess Carolyn sees this incredibly beautiful painting, and she kind of Blues Clueses her brain into it, and imagines a scenic idyllic life. Sitting on the porch of this house, kind of off the beaten path, with Vanessa Gecko as her maid servant. we don't need to get into the psychological implications of that.
Sure. But, I think those are fairly obvious to everyone.
Yeah. Anywho. But she's fine. She gets to live her life away from all the hustle and bustle.
Right.
And this idea is so, I mean, at a certain point we have to take into the fact that it's a TV show and this is jokes, but like, and also the native medium we're dealing in,
mm-hmm.
but it's certainly implied she's kind of just staring at that for like 15 or 20 minutes.
Yeah. Well, it's so beautiful while everybody else is, like I said, gunfighting.
Yeah. Whether that's the narrative conceit to just get her out of the scene or she's quite literally just, you know, but the point is that's so appealing to her that she just cuts everything else out for even 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I want that cat to be happy.
Well, you know, I know that you do. I don't want to say too much because, you know, I don't want to say too much season 5 stuff right now. You know.
Well, but folks, if you're curious, you can listen to our recap.
Yeah, that's true. That's
or you can just watch the show like a normal person.
All right. Well, why? I just recently rewatched The Lost Boys. And have you ever watched that movie?
I don't think so.
Oh, my God. It's a classic. It's a comedy. It's from the 80s. It's a vampire movie. It's amazing.
Before my time.
Oh, God. It's so good. But it's a comedy. And there's this this family basically goes to move in with their grandfather. And their grandfather says something about checking the mail and checking for the TV guide. And one of the grandkids is like, oh, great. You've got a TV. And he's like, no, I read the TV guide. You read the TV guide. You don't need a TV. And so I was just thinking about, well, if you listen to Horses and Men, you don't need to watch the show. That's not accurate at all, though. The opposite is true.
Okay, but I do that with, like, bad movie podcasts.
Uh-huh.
I don't watch the movies.
Well, you
I
should
just listen to the show.
Well, you should listen, or you should watch Lost Boys. It's really good. Anyway.
Oh, I should.
Sorry for the tangent, non sequitur.
Sure. But there, I mean, certainly that's a joke in that, but there are plenty of, like, genuine film criticism podcasts where they talk about movies I haven't seen
and won't ever watch.
Listen to the whole thing. Yep.
Well,
anyway, Leslie, that's nearing the end of all of my notes.
Yep.
Yeah. Just those couple of lines, the Diane's, so you stop.
And, yeah. That's
I bet
so
you didn't
good.
Think I had it in me. No, I did.
No, I did. Oh, and how that's the last thing that she says to him before she gets shit canned. All right, so final question. What is your favorite joke of the episode?
I don't know if I had one.
Huh.
I think I appreciated... I said at the beginning of this that this episode wasn't too, like, intellectually deep, but that doesn't mean it wasn't an enjoyable story and, like, well-told and fun and intricate.
Yeah.
I just didn't think we had a ton of philosophy to talk about, and then turns out we can talk about Elon Musk all the ding-dong day.
Because we are who we are.
So I wasn't really... I guess, man, I think it might have been the... I can't die, I'm in danger.
Yeah. Mine was definitely breaking and entering. That was against everything Nixon stood for.
Yeah, shit, that's a good one.
Yeah, that one was probably my favorite one. Also, just the whole running gag of his illegitimate son. Good stuff. Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah, I think the so you stop hit me so hard that I kind of forgot there were jokes in this
episode. There were jokes in this episode. It hit me pretty hard, too, though.
I think Margot Martindale's last stand speech.
Oh, I was going to mention that, too. This is for CCH Pounder. And this is for, and like all the other, what did she say? All the other people who live in lucrative obscurity. That's what she said.
Yeah. It's when that dog cop is just like, oh, I loved you in Justified. Oh, but
name?
You don't have time to know my name.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
Yeah, her like final stand speech as she's gunning down cops.
Yeah, that was great.
was deeply funny to me.
Yeah.
This is still and that's one of the strengths of the show is that even the filler episodes, although this episode does have lasting impact, it's still kind of fillery-ish.
Yeah, I agree.
Even the filler episodes are competent, well-told stories with plenty of layers and nuance, even if they aren't like the big intellectual backbone episodes.
Yeah.
It's such a good show, Leslie.
Ben, it's such a good show. It's so good, Ben. It's so good.
Should I say the name of this show?
I think it's time.
All right. Folks, this has been Of Horses and Men with Leslie and Ben. I remain, as always, the Ben of that, and you can find me at BENCHAMLIN on Twitter.com.
I, as always, am the Leslie, and you can find me at Vanetti, V-A-N-E-T-T-I, at twitter.com.
You can find us both at Infinity Break 23. That is the studio that publishes this show, and it's also the one that I operate. Podcasts, videos, webcomics, and more, you can find all of that at Infinity Break 23. Stay up to date with all of your favorite shows. Check out new shows that we're creating. Everything is there at infinitybreak.net, where we are telling stories our own way. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/infinitybreak, where a donation as little as $1 a month can help improve the quality of this show and create more shows like it. This week, I have cut it out of this episode, but Leslie and I went on a long... is it a diatribe if it involves two people?
Yeah, I think so, still.
Sure. A long dialogue rant about our favorite fandoms and how much we love them. If you want to hear us talk in great, loving detail about the Rick and Morty fandom and the Sherlock fandom, that's patreon.com/infinitybreak. It allows us to take the risks that are Infinity Break and create all of these new shows just for you and other people. And it'll only be other people if you tell your friends about us. Also, consider leaving a review. Leave a 5-star review on whatever listening platform you are choosing to listen to us on. It helps the show immensely because it helps more people find us. I think that's about everything. We will be back in 1 week's time to talk about the next episode of BoJack Horseman. Leslie, I actually have a fun update for you. We are nearing the episode that Johnny Rinaldo said that he would like to be back on at the end of the season.
I love Johnny! I love
Johnny. We all love Johnny.
Yeah.
Folks, also consider listening to Speak of the Devil, which is every Sunday at 11 p.m. Excuse me. Which is every Sunday at 11 a.m. PST on twitch.tv/infinitybreakgaming. That's Johnny's show. He's a hoot. Anyway, Johnny said he wanted to be back on the Wanda Rose-Colored Glasses episode. And I insisted that he return. Which is great, because I love talking to him about media stuff and sad horses.
I'm pretty sure that's the next episode. That's next week for sure.
Then I'll need to arrange something with him.
Yeah, you need to talk to him, because it's next week. Because I will go ahead and tell you, like I said, episode 11 of every season is the one where everything fucked up happens. And it is Escape from L.A. this season. And we all know which one that is.
What's the name of the husband? Oh, yes.
Kyle.
yes. Kyle and the kids.
Kyle and the kids. He's got a wife and Charlotte's married to him. And he's got some kids.
Folks, it's going to be a turbulent time in the next couple weeks on Of Horses and Men with Leslie and Ben. We greatly hope that you join us for that ride. Subscribe, tell your friends, leave a review, donate to our Patreon, tell your friends, tell your friends, tell your friends, tell your friends, follow us on Twitter, especially me, so that I can catch up to Leslie and we can be as equals.
That'll never happen.
No, it never will. You're like 600 followers ahead of me.
Well, I wasn't just talking about followers, I was just talking about generally being superior to you.
This has been Of Horses and Men with Ben. We'll see you next week.
See you next week, folks.
Implicitly firing you, sorry.
This podcast is part of Infinity Break, where we're telling stories our own way. You can find all of our shows, podcasts, webcomics, and more at infinitybreak.net. Stay up to date with new show announcements, behind-the-scenes sneak peeks, and updates on your favorite shows. You can follow us on any social media platform by searching for Infinity Break 23. That's Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/infinitybreak. Every dollar helps us improve the quality of this show and create new shows like this one for your listening pleasure. Thank you for listening. Please tell your friends. And as always, stay in the loop.